Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And today we have, for me, the unending subject.
I know, it's exciting.
We had done a French wine primer, and I wanted to do an Italian wine primer, and then I was thinking, can I get it done in one program, because the topic is giant.
Right, yeah.
Well, in Italy, you have 350 just authorized grape varietals for DOCs and DOCGs, let alone all of the other varieties in Italy and the history of them, and that's just kind of...
It's a lot to learn.
It is, and it's funny. The French organized wine first in the AOC system, and the DOC and DOCG system in Italy came after, but the vine, I mean, it traveled, you know, through the Mediterranean via the Phoenicians from Mesopotamia and Italy and the islands. That really, it doesn't get to France without being in Italy. I mean, the Romans took the vine to France. You know, you have sites. That's one of the craziest things, is walking on some live volcano or something where a particular grape variety has been cultivated that came directly from Mesopotamia.
That's amazing.
That's been there for 3,300 years or something insane mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. So I think, and vines, as adaptive as they adapt quickly, but they continue to adapt. And the amount of history that, you know, if you have old vines, say 120-year-old vines, the ancient vines, up on one of these volcanoes, where that's an amazing thing about this particular plant, the vinifera vines, that they have a memory of seasons, they have a memory of conditions. So they know the pattern of those 12 decades that they've been growing up on that hill, and how it's going to grow this season is based on all the signals in its experience. And that's one of those things that I don't know where else that it's there's beautiful things grown in other parts of Europe and the States and other places in the world, and we're figuring out how to cultivate really interesting wine and worthwhile wine in a lot of places, but to get the vine to really speak of the place and the place and the conditions and the time and tell a story with great clarity, besides, you know, being real tasty and you know, calories that historically especially were really important to people, and a way to preserve it's a really good way to preserve fruit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do your harvest in September, October, and you know what? You want to stay warm in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
You got it. But you think about it. I mean, that's why whiskey exists. You know, whiskey exists to get grain to market without paying a fortune for transportation or paying kind of crazy grain taxes in the U.S. I mean, and grapes the same. Like, how do you preserve this product through the seasons? How do I get these grapes to market? You know, you got to figure out something to do with it, and that's why it became that's why wine became such a commercial thing. People grew it for themselves, but everybody sold also. And
when you talk about the volcanic area, it's just amazing to think that vines can even grow there.
Well,
it's unbelievable.
Things grow, and sometimes things are giant. And that's the volcanic soil is really, really rich. I mean, you see eggplants the size of a table for four dinner table, like laying in a field. It's kind of a crazy thing. I've seen those things before.
Didn't we also pick fruit from a tree when we were there?
Yeah, cherries.
Cherries. Oh,
yeah,
my goodness.
Yeah, gigantic sweet cherries.
What a beautiful place.
Mount Etna.
My goodness.
But that's just, I mean, that just, there's a little perspective on some of the reality of wine in Italy, is that history and regionality are the drivers, you know, and regionality is to me, the cultural driver of Italy. Italy speaks eight languages every day, which you don't always consider. We just think, oh, it's Italian, it's pizza, it's, you know, that. And there is an Italian identity. That being said, regional identities are really strong. And when you're not in the big cities, which is the large majority of people still don't live in the big cities, regional identities are very, very strong. And on the table, super strong. And wine-wise, obviously, the conditions are very, very different. And Italy is an odd place as far as geographically, it's a peninsula, but there's a spine of mountains that runs down the entire thing. Without modern transportation, how do you get from places to other places? It's seriously difficult.
Right.
So the number of people that for, you know, millennia lived and died in the same village or on the same site or in the same little area.
The mountains kind of contained them there.
Well, the mountains would keep the people in Abruzzo, you know, and in one little pocket of Abruzzo. Mm-hmm. The same thing in the places that we kind of know the best or were more like, you know, civilization kind of popped. There's a reason that Rome was the center of the world for Italy is because they had the easiest transportation. They had the sea right there. There's a river right there. And there's literally probably the wealthiest plains are all north of them on a straight shot. There's protection from those mountains, but there's also division from them. And that's especially as you head south, much harder to get around. And that's one of the reasons for some of the poverty in the south historically. In the north, the mountains are more protection, especially when you get to the Alps and the Dolomites and that sort of business. So that's something to just consider just culturally for the nation to develop. You know, when you're in Milano and west in the north, that whole sort of northwest quarter, and there are different regions there for growing wine, and we can get into that in a few moments. But when you're in that quarter, that's all the old kingdom of Savoy, you know, the Reggio di Savona, the king of Savona, which is on both sides of what is the modern French-Italian border. And that's pretty consistently one culture on both sides of the border. And so winemaking, cheesemaking, a lot of things food-wise are close. And that's and different from what you see in the Northeast, which is all Austrian Empire influence, Habsburg influence. And, you know, when you're talking about not just the mountain regions, but down towards Friuli, which is, you know, on the Slovenian border. And that there is that influence, the Venetian influence, you know, south of them. And towards the center of the country is very, very strong, and you can feel that. It's funny. It's like a world of like bankers and cheese, you know, in that that pocket of the Northeast, but not the extreme Northeast. And the center of the nation is what most people think of as the Italy that they want to visit, sort of from like Pisa down to Rome, let's say, and. There you have plains in the west for the most part along the sea. And then in the east on the Adriatic, you have the various mountain regions. And those mountain regions, super interesting cooking. You know, the Marche, which is really divided from Tuscany by the mountains pretty perfectly, and Umbria, which borders it and is the only landlocked region of Italy. And not surprisingly, pretty heavy cooking too. But you have different traditions in each of those places. But that center of the country is relatively connected, relatively connected commercially, and weather conditions are not that dissimilar there. So that's sort of, I think of that as sort of being classical Italy to most of our perception of it. And then once you get south of there, once you get to Naples and south, you're either leaning to the west, the Campanian side, and all the wine growing happens there on the hills. And it's a very, you know, very, very seafood and preserved meat-based diet. And you have the very poor country south and east in Puglia and Calabria. And that's literally like survival diet. That's like grain and vegetables. And wine growing was a lot more about calories for, you know, a couple of thousand years than it was about anything else.
When you say that, what do you mean when you say it's about calories?
I mean, the same reason that British naval conscripts got rations of rum every day on their boat, so you had enough calories to exist.
Okay, all right.
You know, when one of the famous breads from Puglia, maybe the most famous bread in Italy, is a Pugliese loaf, and the Pugliese loaf you never ever ever don't finish. There's a proverb about not finishing the bread. You know, that's every speck of bread you leave on your plate is a day you're going to spend in purgatory. So,
okay.
In a Catholic country, you can say that kind of stuff. The islands have their own personality and a bit their own culture.
Definitely. Yeah.
You know, in Sardinia and Sicily for sure. But even in Sicily, you have divisions from the east, which is a very Greek end of the island, you know, to the west, which definitely leans, you know, more North African. And it's you can feel the blend of all the peoples in Sicily, but you can feel concentrations west and east. For certain, because the center of the island is relatively empty. If you're not close to the coast, you're probably not going to eat something, you know, historically.
It's an amazing country. It is really diverse. To go from the northern part of the country to the southern part of the country is amazing difference. I mean, food and the culture. I mean, it is all tied together ultimately, but I think just being in the northern, particularly in the Alto Adige, is such a surprise. I'll never forget going there the first time and feeling like I was in Austria.
You see your face when someone says, Guten Morgen?
Yeah. I'm like, wait, what?
I said, that's their way of saying, welcome to Italy, son.
Well, I like that.
Yeah, but it's the reality of it, and all of that is reflected in wine growing. So, stop 1 second.
Ready? Okay. Yeah. So, Tony, how is wine part of the table in Italy, and particularly with all the different, you know, you just described a lot of different regions? And
It's funny. It's almost like a birthright. It seems like that, you know, there's going to be wine on the table. There was a restaurant that we walked into, looked like a pretty simple place. That was a place that specialized in pizza. That was like this young couple's name, and it's the young couple obviously running it. And I walk in this place, and look at the menu, and they have like 50 different kinds of pizza, and I ask for the wine list. And she says, I'm the wine list, red or white.
That's great.
You know,
I love that.
She's like, it's stuff my brother grows.
That's great.
It's just like, it's just part of the table.
Mm-hmm.
It may be very modest like that. You know, it was five, I think it was like a carafe. It was like a liter. It was like €5 or something.
Very cool.
2 years ago. It's kind of crazy. And it was tasty. It was really easy Sangiovese, and I was thirsty. So it's on the table, one. And it depends upon what your priority is for the meal, but things go together. Things make sense together. There's a thing that's served with the thing, that the wine is part of the dish. It's not, I don't make this pasta, you know, on Sunday unless you get that wine that goes with that pasta. You know, I'm not grilling these fish unless you get me the vermentino that I want that I'm going to serve with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's part of it. It's part of the table. It's one of the legs of the damn table. It's not an option.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
and
it's
a
not
good
like
way to live.
And there is the right answer. That's the other thing.
It should be part of the table.
There is the right answer, and there may be an economic scale of what that answer might be.
Right. Yeah. Of course.
But for the most part, there is the right answer.
And if the food is indigenous to that particular region, then the wine is going to go with the food, because the winemaker is going to be thinking about the food that he eats every day or she eats every day. So,
but because I remember watching you learn that in France,
mm-hmm.
with wine
so
growers.
So exciting! Yes, the
but
respect
think about,
for the table.
Think about how easy France is to get around compared to Italy.
That's for sure. Absolutely.
Okay, so historically, if all that cooking from a particular region is trapped in that region for a couple of thousand years. And they've been at serious cooking for a couple of thousand years longer than the French.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can't forget that it's Catherine de' Medici that kind of like turned the French on to more serious food, you know.
Correct. Right.
Even brought forks with her. Crazy.
Thank goodness for that.
And good cooks, because they didn't have any.
Well, you can imagine how it changed eating. All of a sudden you didn't have to put your food in bread anymore. You could actually put it on a fork. You know, everything wasn't.
Yeah. Crazy,
craziness. Big change in the way that food was made.
So, I mean, that's the thing. When you have that cooking concentrated with the same products, there's a refinement. You know, it's like I think the cooking adapts just like the vine adapts to the place, the conditions of the place, the story, the history. Like people learn, well, when you get nice fava beans, you do this. When you get this particular grain, you make this particular pasta. I think that's part of the story. When we come back, we'll get into more of the regions of Italy and just do a little rundown of specific grapes and dishes to look for on Formula Wolf and Food & Wine. ¶¶